We're starting here at the top of Mem Vav and Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara is about to discuss the machlokus between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim that's found in the Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar says that we hang both a man and a woman, just that the man is hung facing the Am, whereas the woman is hung facing away from the Am. On the other hand, the Chachamim say no, that a man is hung, but a woman is not hung at all. So Gemara wants to know what's the source for the Rabbanan's position. My time with the Rabbanan. So Amar Kura, the Pasuk says, Vatalita Oto, that you have to hang him. Oto Veloata. Him and not her. I mean, it's written in the male conjugation, not the female conjugation. Therefore, we're going to hang only a male and not a female. Rabbi Elazar says, wait a minute. We need that oto ready for a drasha. We brought that in the Braisa. That oto below ksuto. That's the limud that we have that teaches us that a person is stoned naked because it says oto, that you stone him below ksuto, but not with his clothing on. Rabbanan ain't ochanami. You're right. The Rabbanan say, you know, en ochanami. They need that limit also to teach them that the person is stone naked. Elamar Kruah, the Pasuk says, v'chiyye b'ish chet mavet. Says, v'chiyye ish chet mavet. Ish, v'lo isha. So again, it's in the male form. It's ish instead of isha. And therefore, only a man will have to be hung, whereas a woman will not be hung. Rabbi Eliezer, hi, v'chiyye b'ish my dar ish pei. So what does Rabbi Eliezer do with the word ish over here? Amash lakish, how old am ute ben sureru more? That comes to exclude a case of ben sureru more. Barin sureru more, once he reaches the age of ish, cannot be a ben sureru more. So therefore, Vatanya, ben sureru more niskal vitnitla, divri Rabbi Eliezer. Now we have a brisa that says, ben sureru is stoned and hung up, according to Rabbi Eliezer. So it can't be that he's using the word ish to exclude a ben sureru more. Avram Nachman Bar Yitzchak, the Rabot Ben Sarer Omer, comes to include a Ben Sarer Omer. That's the extra word of Ish. My time, Adam Akra, V'chiyye, V'ish Chait. So the Pasuk starts out and says, if a person has a Chait, but Ish, uses the term Ish, Ish being an adult, Ben Sarer Omer has not reached the point of being adult, otherwise he couldn't become a Ben Sarer Omer. Below Ben Chait, has to be an Ish, and not a Ben. Mish Al Chato Ne'erag, Yatza Ben Sarer Omer, Shal Shum Sofo Ne'erag. There's an additional miut in the Pasuk. So the first miut of Ben Sarer in the Pasuk is that it says the word Ish. Ish means a man, velo ben. So that would exclude a Ben Sarer Merer. Then in top of it, it says, Chive Ish Chait Mavet. It has a Chait that is deserving of death. Ben Sarer Merer doesn't do anything necessarily that is deserving of death because he's Nerag al Shum Sofo. He's Nerag because what we think he will do in the future, his actions today are deplorable, but they are not deserving of a death penalty, but yet we kill him anyway because of what we think will happen in the future. So he's not dying for the chayt now. So that's another exclusion. So the Pasuk has two exclusions for Ben Sarer Omer. Having miut achar miut, it's two exclusions, one after the other. And we have a principle, when there's a miut achar miut, vein miut achar miut, the rabot. When you have two exclusions coming successively, then it really means to include. So over here, since it excluded Ben Sarer Omer twice, we say the limud or the drashot shah Torah and the drashot behem tell us that a miyot achar miyot comes to be the rabot, and therefore we include ben sarer omer more to be hung up, even though he wouldn't have qualified under the psukim like we learned before, whether it was under the klal uprat or under the ribui umiyut, they wouldn't have been included. But because there's two miyutim in the pasuk to exclude ben sarer omer, that actually in the end ends up including him. So Rabbi Eliezer velo shim moshetach talan nashim. So Rabbi Eliezer says to the chachamim, didn't Shimon Machetach, when he executed the Edim and Chashafot, he hung them up on the afterwards? So we see that women are hung. So Rav Chista, lo shanu, ela b'shtei mitot, aval mitachat danim. The Chachamim responded to Rabbi Eliezer and said that Shimon Machetach, right, is an unusual case. How do we know it's an unusual case? Because generally, ein danim shnayim biyom echad. We don't bring two capital cases on the same day. And here, Shimon ben Shetach brought 80 cases on a single day. So, but Rav Chista says that restriction against bringing multiple capital cases on a single day is elo b'shtei mitot. That's only when the death penalties are different. Aval b'mita achad danim. If they have the same death penalty, then we do it on a single day. V'amasa b'shimon shetach t'mita achad havai. Well, with the case by Shimon Shetach, they all were killed the exact same way. And the Chachamim are still using Shimon Shetach to show you that you're not dying a single din, that what he did was unusual, even though all the sorceresses, all the Mechashefot, got the same punishment. So that can't be the explanation of Ein Danim Shnayim B'Yom Echad. Ella Itmar Hachitmar. This is where you have to say or express what Rav Chista said. Lo Shano B'Mitachat Ke'ein Shtei Mitot. That's only true when it's one mitah that is like two mitot. Vechidami, kegon shtei averot. That is two averot. Aval mitah achat v'reachat danim. So this is the qualification that if they have the same death penalty and it's for the same sin, then the Beis Din can do the same thing on a, can try multiple capital cases on a single day, because the Chachamim, the Dayanim already being involved in these cases and looking for as chuyot, and in the, since they're focused on the same Aveira, on the same Mita, they can handle that in one day. On the other hand, if it's two Aveirot, even though they're going to be put to death with the same death penalty, they cannot do that on a single day because they need to be Me'ayin in the two cases, and that won't be afforded to them, or that opportunity won't be afforded, because they're talking about two different death penalties. And both Tosos and Rashi point out over here, by the case of Shimon Shetach, so what are you going to say there? It was one Aveira, and it was one death. So how come the Chachamim say over here that he's under the, or violated the restriction of Ein Danim Shnayim B'Yom Echad? He didn't. He had one Aveira, one death penalty, and therefore it shouldn't have been considered an unusual case. So how the Chachamim bring that as an unusual case and say that you can't prove anything from it? The answer, according to Rashi and Tosfos, is that they were not all the same Aveira, that there were multiple Aveirot. Meaning that Rashi points out, Ushmonim Nashim Lav Aveira Chatayu, Deika Ba'ov, Deika Ba'idoni. There are different types of sorceresses. There's types that do the Ov type of sorcery, and the others that do the Idoni. And the Pasuk divides those up into different Aveirot. And Tosfos adds on beyond that, there's Chover Chover and other Mechashefot, meaning that there are multiple manifestations of Mechashefot, and therefore they are not classified as one Aveirot. These are multiple Aveirot, even though they're getting the same punishment. And since that was the case, Shimon Shechlech did it because it was a Hirat Sha'a. It was an unusual situation that he had to be make a Geder and take care of the situation. So when he did it, even though it wasn't under the normal due process that is afforded to the defendants in a case, nevertheless he did it. And the Chacham is saying, based on that, you can't prove anything that he hung these sorceresses up afterwards because he did everything outside of due process. So who says that hanging is the normal way or the normal thing that you do with women? That might have been an unusual circumstance over here. Now the Gemara says, Meiti Ravada Bravo, Ein Danim Shnayim B'Yom Echad, V'Afilu B'Noef No'Efet. You're not allowed to adjudicate two capital cases on the same day, even in a case of adulterers. Now wait, adulterers are going to end up with the same punishment. They're going to get the same death penalty. So you have the same Avira and the same death penalty, and yet we're not allowing you to do this on the same day. So Gemara says, Takamar of Chisra, Chisra explained this case, V'Vat Kohen U'Bo Allah. U'Bo'Vat Kohen V'Zome Zome Meha. Then bad here, death penalties for adultery, where the punishment of the woman and the man are not the same. And that comes up actually in a case where it's a bat kohen, a rusa unusua, who adulters, and she is punished by sreifa, but the boala, her husband, the person who had the affair with her, the outside party that had the affair with her, will be punished if it's an arusa with skila, or if it's a nusua with chenek. So therefore, yeah, there are two different punishments, even though they were adulterers, and they were together, they had the same act is going to be mechayev them over here. So it's actually the same avira. Nevertheless, since it's two mitot, it's two different death penalties, the woman is going to get sreifa because she's a bat kohen. The other hand, the man is going to get either skila or chenek, depending if he is a, if she's an arusa or a nisua. So therefore, they have two different death penalties. If they have two different death penalties, we can't try the cases on the same day. Or the other case is a possibility, bat kohen v'zomamei zomameha. In a case where a bat kohen is brought to trial, and she's going to be put to death, she's going to be put to death b'sreifa. The edim that testified against her, others edim came along and made them into edim zomimim. Said, you weren't there, imanu ha'item. Now we have a principle by edim zomimim that we do, kasher zomam lasot le'achiv, that we do like he would done to his brother. His brother means in the male form. So even though they testified against the bat kohen and she's going to get the punishment of sreifa, they nevertheless get the punishment that the bo'el, the person who had the affair with her, would get, and that'd be the punishment of, depending again, if she's an arusa, it would be skila. If she's a married woman, it would be chenek. They would get that punishment. So that'd be a different punishment. Now, but once they're made into edim zomimim, she's no longer put to death. So there's only one death penalty here, it's the edim zomimim. Along comes then the second set of edim, and they make the second set, they made the first set into edim zomimim, they make them into zomimim. So you have kat number gimel, the third come along, and they say kat bet was imanu ha'item. Now, Kat Bet had said with Aleph Imanu Hayitem, but now we've invalidated Kat Bet by the Kat Gimel. So now Kat Aleph again become good Edim. If they're good Edim, they're testifying against this Bat Kohen. So what's going to end up happening here is that the Bat Kohen is going to be put to death b'sreifa, and Zomamei Zomamea, Kat Bet, is going to be put to death with the punishment that the husband should have gotten, which is either Skila or Chenek. So again, here we have, this might be a two Aveirot, but it's also two Mitot. And because of that, we do not try them on the same day. And that does not undermine the position or the statement of Rav Chista. As long as it's one Avera and one punishment, you can adjudicate the case on the same day. If there's any difference in that, it's either two Averot or two different death penalties. Of course, if it's both, two different issues, then we cannot try them on the same day. Tanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Shemati Shebeitin Makin Veochin Shalom Min HaTorah, that the Beis Din is given the right to punish and to execute on items, first of all, on Averot, they're not deserving of such a penalty Min HaTorah, and also to give out such a penalty, a death penalty or capital or corporal crimes, or punishments, even though the crimes do not match that. So, Velo Avor Al Divrei Torah, it's not because they're coming to undermine what the Torah says, or they're coming to change the Torah, in order to create a fence around the Torah. Meaning that it's a horat sha'ah, it's an unusual circumstance. In this unusual circumstance, we want the Beis Din to act outside of the rule of Torah, or outside the rule of law, in order to set a precedent by which people will then learn their lesson. And what's the case like this? The person who's riding on a horse during the time of the Greeks, we know that riding on a horse is only a shivut on Shabbat, it's only an Isur Derabanan, yet he was doing it in the time of Yevanim. And the time of Yevanim, there was heavy persecution against the Jews for keeping the Shabbos, and people were afraid to keep the Shabbos. So Beis Din wanted to make a statement that Shabbos is important, and we don't want people to back away from Shabbos because of the Greeks, and therefore, revealed to Beis Din Misaklua, they gave him a death penalty when he came to Beis Din. Even though he wasn't deserving of a death penalty, because it was only a violation of a Din Derabanan, nevertheless, we gave him the death penalty in order to set a precedent and say, listen, Shabbos is very important. Even if you think you're afraid of the Yevanim, you've got to keep Shabbos, and we got to keep Shabbos properly. We can't have people here being mityavnim and going over to the side of the Greeks because they're afraid of them. They culturally are being drawn to them, but they have to keep the Shabbos no matter what. Again, not because he was deserving of the death penalty by Skila, but that the times required it. Shuv maaseh be'adam echad is also another case like this. A person had relations with his wife under a fig tree, meaning out in the public domain. They revealed to Beit Din, and they brought him to Beit Din, and they gave him Malkot. Again, it's not because he was deserving of Malkot. There's no punishment for doing such a behavior. It was with his wife. He had relations. There's nothing wrong, in a sense, with what he did. But there is, because his behavior is not a behavior of tzniut. It's not a behavior that we want people to publicly display. And therefore, Chachamim wanted to set a standard or precedent and say, this is not the way we behave or people behave in public. Again, the times required it in order for Beis Din to set down the line, make a line in the stand and say, this is not the behavior that we're going to accept or is acceptable to us. And therefore, they punished, even though they were not deserving of that punishment. Okay, now we move on to the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah is going to explain to us how they actually did the hanging. We say now that a person that gets skilah is hung. The Mishnah limited that to a Ovid of Avodah Zarah and a Mikalel Hashem. So now once we've done that, once we've established that they have to be hung, how are they hung? So the Mishnah says, Ketzinotolinoto. How do we actually hang up the individual? So, Rabbi Yosium, Meshakin et HaKorah Ba'aretz, we take a piece of wood or a beam of sorts and we implant it in the ground. And then there's a pin or something at the top that comes out of this board. We take his two hands, this is the person who's been stoned to death in this instance, we take his two hands and tie them together, either adjacent to each other or one over the other, we tie them together, and then while they're tied together, we hang him up, based where his two hands are basically above his head and tied together, we hang him up on the pin with that his hands tied together. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Korah Mutala Koto. The Torah is not, this Korah, or this beam, is not implanted in the ground, but rather is either rested against the wall, I don't know if it's on one side of the wall, and then you hang them on the other side for the beam that comes over, but somehow the beam is secured by being against the wall, but not by implanted in the ground, and we'll see in the Gemara why that is such a machokas. The same way that those that are skinning an animal would do, how they set up their Korah against the wall, whether either it's attached to the wall somehow, or affixed to the wall in a temporary manner, but it's something that is jammed in, but can be taken out at some point. We'll see that in the Gemara. Once they've hung him up, they take him down right away. I mean, this is not something where we leave him up for an extended period of time, but rather do it quickly, and the Gemara explain how we do that. Vimlan over ala belotase. If he actually is left overnight, then you violate the lotase in the Torah. That you're not allowed to leave his body on the tree overnight. So because of that, if he does do that, then we're in violation of an Isur. Kikavor tik berenel, because you must bury him right away. Kikalat alukim taloi, that it's a right, that it's deplorable in Hashem's eyes. It's awful for Hashem for someone who is left hanging. Klomar mipnei mazit taloi. Why is this individual being hung up after he was stoned? Because he acted inappropriately. What do you mean he acted inappropriately? He went ahead and cursed Hashem, chas v'shalom, and because of that, he's now being stoned and hung up. But what's going to happen? If he's left up on the eights, it turns out that there'll be a chilul Hashem and not a kiddush Hashem anymore. What's the chilul Hashem? According to Rashi, the chilul Hashem is that if he remains on the tree, people are going to come and speak and say, oh, what did he do? And they're going to talk more and more about this person who, chas v'shalom, cursed Hashem, and that's going to end up actually making it into a more of a chilul Hashem, because they're actually going to repeat or talk about the crime more and more. I think you could have argued also that the idea that a person is left on the tree is creating, there is now a chilul Hashem. I mean that what was supposed to be done in order that people learn not to do something is going to end by violating and leaving him on the tree, and turns out to be a chilul Hashem. That there's something by acting this manner, instead of creating a kiddush Hashem, and instead of people learning a lesson, you're now in violation of a Torah law. So you're now you're mechalal Hashem Shemaim, and the whole purpose of doing this is to be mekadesh Hashem Shemaim. So it seems to be the opposite, or you're not actually dealing with the or appropriately acting in this manner to be mekadesh Hashem Shemaim. Amar Rabbi Meir, b'shash adam mitzta'er shchina malashon umeret. When a person's in pain, what does the Shechina say? Kalani miroshi, kalani mizroi. Says my head hurts, my hands hurts. So I mean that Akadosh Baruch Hu, the Gemara is going to darshan how he knows this from the pasuk Kilat Elokim, that Hashem even feels bad. This individual is being hung up. The Torah feels that Akadosh Baruch Hu feels horrible about this. That a person is now being put to death over their sins, and therefore he feels awful about this. Imkain. Shem here is worried about the blood of those that are Rishayim. Here is a person who is Mekalel, Chas v'Shalom et Hashem, and now that he's putting to death, and Hashem is upset about this. Certainly on the Daman of the Tzadikim, that Hashem will be upset about this. They didn't just say this. Right, meaning that not only is there a restriction against leaving the mate who's hung up after a death penalty to leave him overnight, but anybody who leaves a mate overnight is over belotase. He violates a lotase. Halinu lichvodo. If they left him overnight in order for the kavod of the mate himself, then avilo aron the tachrichim, to bring him a proper coffin, or to bring him the proper tachrichim to wear clothing. Einu over alav, then it's not a violation. I mean, something that's done for kvoda mate is not a violation, and there of the vlotase, aval, to leave over the mate, not for kvoda mate, that is a violation of the isur to leave a mate over. This individual was put to death in Beis Din, is not buried in his forefathers or in the graves of his fathers, it's the plot of family blood. Lashtei bate kvoda yu, there was two special cemeteries. Dukanim the Beit Dinach, for Beis Din, for those who were put to death by Beis Din, there were two areas. Two sections. One were for anybody put to death by Hereg and Chenek, by choking and by the sword, by beheading. And the other one is for those that were stoned and burnt to death. So they were, actually, that's Allah HaMashin Sinai, we'll see in the Gemara, that there were only two sections, but people got buried in those two sections. Once the flesh has already been eaten up, then, and all that's left is the bones of the individual, then milaktin et atzamot. Then they gather back the bones, v'kovrim oton b'mikoman. Then you take them back to where they belong and bury them in the family plot. Why is that? So Rashi explains here, because, number one, we don't want to bury a rasha next to a tzaddik, and therefore we won't bury this person who was put to death by Beis Din next to the rest of his family. That's one. Number two is, why after his body is decomposed and all that's left is the bones, do we move him? Because, kvar nitkaper b'mitato. The kapara from his death is carried out. We know when it's complete is when all the basar, all the flesh has been eaten up, and the bones are just left, and therefore they can move him back to kivrei avutav. Okay, the Mishnah continues. Afterwards, a kovim ba'im v'sholim b'shloma dayanim. After this individual is put to death, the relatives have to come and greet the dayanim and speak to the dayanim in a, call it a positive manner. They speak to him in a positive manner. Why? And they asked that from the Edim. Also, we don't have anything against you. What you did was right. That you did the right thing. Even though it's painful for us to lose a relative, nevertheless, we understand that you did this based on the law and the Torah law. And we understand what you did is right, not that because you wanted to kill him, but because the person's actions led to this. So therefore, they're lo hayu mitablim. They're not allowed to be avilim. Avilim, which is a demonstration of sadness and actions that show that a person is grieving, those they can't do, because that would almost be an affront to the dayanim, or affront to the edim, in a sense that they're mitabel, saying that, wow, we lost somebody, so we don't want them to do that. Aval onanim. They're allowed to be onanim, or they are onanim, shein aninut el balev. Because aninut is not associated with any action, but rather it's a feeling inside, it's a feeling of the heart. It's a regesh, meaning that Rashi says over here, kadesh bizyonan kapara lahen, in order that their embarrassment should be a kapara for them. Ela onanim bilvat, right? The only people, that all they're doing is being onanim. Dein ze kavod haharug, which is not a kavod for the person who was put to death. It's a personal, emotional feeling. Ven kaparatoni merbakach. So this won't affect his kapara. It's not a form of kavod for the mace that will somehow pull back, hurt his ability to get kapara or be an affront to the dayanim. It's the way a person feels. You can't dictate over here that a person should not feel sad. They can feel sad. They just can't demonstrate or have actions that demonstrate that sadness or that emotion, which might relate, interesting enough, that many know, to the Rav's chiddush by Avelut, that the actions by Avelut, that Kiyum Avelut is really belave. That the actions that surround Avelut are really demonstrations of what is in the lave and what's in the heart. We're going to see in a second in the Gemara whether who we do the Avelut for, who it's a kavod for. But you see over here that Aninut is belave, that there is an aspect of Avelut, especially according to the Rambam, who learns out Avelut from Aninut, that Aninut belave, there is an aspect of Avelut that relates to the feelings and not simply the actions that surround those feelings. Now the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Ilu Neymar, if it had said in the Pasuk, Chait Vitalita, had it said the pasuk had been written away, that Ki Eli Ish Chait Mishpat Mavet Vehumat Vitalita. So over here you say Chait Mishpat Mavet, and then Vehumat Vitalita. Had the word Chait been adjacent to the word Vitalita, Iti Omer Tolinoto Vachakach Mimitinoto, I would think first you hang him up and then you kill him. Kederach Shem Malchuto said the way that the kingdom does, meaning that the way probably that the Romans at the time did. Tamil Omar Humat Vitalita. The Pasuk says no, that you must first Humat, that he be put to death, and then Vitalita, only after he's dead do you hang him up. First they put him to death and then they hang him up. Kate said, how do you do this? So this is a description of what the Mishnah demands of us. When it comes to a case where they're going to bring a Gmar Din of a death penalty over here, they only bring the Gmar Din right before sunset. They complete the sentence, and then they take him out for execution, and mimitino to, they kill him, and then they hang him up. Echad kosher v'echad matir. They tie him up to hang him up, and immediately they take him back down, in order that they have the mitzvah tliyah. But we don't leave the body out there all day. We do it, it's a very, very short process. They hang him up quickly, and then they take him down, because he's not allowed to be there overnight. So again, they wait to do the din right before shkiyat hachama, so that they immediately have to take him back down. Turn around, and it says by the Pasuk, lo tali nivlato al eitz, you can't leave his body on the eitz, shomei ani ben betalush ben mechubar, that you're allowed to put it on, whether it's attached to the ground, or whether it's not attached to the ground, tamar ki kavor tikbirenu, that you have to bury him, mi shein mechusar lekvura, you hang him up on an eitz, a tree that is only missing in the process of taking him down from this tree, and then burying him. But in a case where you hang him up on a live tree, over there, in order to bury the mace, you're going to have to cut the tree down, plus you're going to have to then bury him. So we don't allow that. We only put him up, and that's what the Mishnah describes, that we take a board, and we implant that board into the ground. Rabbi Yossi Omer, mi she'enu mechusar lekvura, right? Someone who's only missing kvura, yatzazeh shemechusar tlisha'al ukvura. Now you can't even use, according to Rabbi Yossi, you can't even use a board that is implanted in the ground, and that's why he suggests over there that you have to do it actually by the kotel, that you lean it up against the wall, because even if you use a board, the board is missing something too. The board is missing tlisha, being ripping it out of the ground, plus the burial. So again, that's too far removed from what the Torah demands. The Torah demands he's hung up, and then he immediately is buried afterwards. Rabbanan tlisha lav klumhi. According to Rabbanan, taking something out of the ground, or taking this board that's implanted in the ground and removing it from the ground, that is not considered to be an action or such a action that is chashuv, that is of import, that we would consider it to be some sort of hefsek or some sort of problem towards getting the person buried. And again, remember that they bury not only the person himself, but they also bury the board that he's hung on along with him. So therefore, they're going to have to undo this item. So not that they can just untie him and take him down. They don't have to cut the tree down or have to take the board out, because they're going to bury that with him. So therefore, according to the Chachamim, it's enough that we just have the board implanted in the ground. That's not considered to be a violation of Kavor Tikvareno, that you immediately bury him. And then Rabbi Yossi says Tlisha is a violation. Tosfos points out over here that Tlisha, we know that in other places that Tlisha does have a chashivut. There is some sort of value placed on Tlisha as a real malacha, for instance, in Shabbos and other places. So Tosfos wants to differentiate about what the item is that you are Tlish. Then about dirt from the ground or something like that, where you're Tlish, dirt connected to the ground is much more connected than a board that's been implanted in the ground. The board implanted again may not be considered tlisha, because they're separate items or separate entities. Whereas a fire, dirt itself, is one entity, and since it's one entity, therefore we do not consider it as if it is tlisha. Right now the Gemara continues. So klomar mipnei ma ze talui, mipnei sheberech et Hashem. Why do we not leave the body up there for a long duration or overnight? We said over there because that'll be a chil Hashem instead of a kiddush Hashem. Klomar. Mipnei ma ze talui. Why is this person being hung and put out? He's stoned and hung. Mipnei shebirach et Hashem, because he chas v'shalom cursed Hashem. Tanya. Omer Rabbi Meir mashlu mashal. They made a mashal to explain this idea. Lama davar dome. What is this similar to? L'shnei achim tomim. They have two twin brothers. Beir achat, in one city. Echad minu the melech. One became the king. V'chad yatzad listiot, and one of them became a thief or a robber or a marauder. Tzio melech v'tlo. They took the command, king commanded to arrest the brother and hang him for his crimes. So kol ha'royal told, then people were walking by and they saw him. They said, "Hamelech talui, the king is hung," because they were twin brothers. They were identical twins, and everybody thought the king was being hung. Tzio melech, what we do? The king said, "Take him back down." So the same thing here. Adam who is bitzur, that we are made in the tzurat of God. We're in the tzura of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, the tzura of Elukim. And therefore, when he's hung up, it's as if Hashem, Kodesh Baruch Hu, you know, Kaviyachol is being hung up. Therefore, we say, take the body down immediately. We don't want it left up there. We don't let it left up there overnight. Because it's as if something's gone wrong. I mean, a person or individual who's violating the Torah is not acting in the way that Hashem wants. It somehow is a problem or a mechilul Hashem. Because it's showing that either Hashem's, this person's not concerned with Hashem, and it diminishes Hashem's kavod in the olam. Or even more important, so Hashem set out a plan for the world, and this person is not carrying out that plan, and it's kviyochol that they are violating the word of Hashem. So the longer we leave him out there, there's more reminder that this individual did such a thing. Because the opposite effect of what we want here, instead of creating kiddush Hashem, we're going to end up with a chilul Hashem. I'm Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir said in the Mishnah, what does it mean, kilat Hashem? Why is it kilat elukim? What is the word kilat elukim? He says that means kali. Akash Baruch Hu says, "Klani mi roshi, klani mi zroi." So, Mary wants to know what does that mean. Amar Bai, Kaman Domar Kal Leis. It's not light, but it is heavy. And in order not to make anything sound heavy for Akash Baruch Hu, but basically it's saying my head is heavy, my arms are heavy. It means that feeling when a person is despondent, when a person is upset. So that's what it means. Kilat Alukim. Rav Meir is darshaning from that Kal lately, that I am not light, but rather heavy. That Akash Baruch Hu is feeling heavy over the death of this individual. You shouldn't have read kalani or kalani. Should have read kaved. It's heavy. My head is heavy. My arms are heavy. Why write it in such a backwards manner? So, Ella, I'm a Rav. Explain like this. Come on, the Markili Alma. The world is light to me. I mean, I'm feeling lightheaded. I'm not feeling good. Meaning that's the idea here, that Akash Baruch was upset. It says, I mean, Bele the Gufa. How could you learn out from this idea that Akash Baruch was upset over the killing of the Rishayim, because imkay name akra mikalel. The pasuk should said kilat elokim. That teaches that someone who is mikalel Hashem is hung up. But you wouldn't know that if you didn't have the word kilat. How can you be dashing some of that? So the Gemara says you should have used the word mikalel. My kilat. Why does it use the term kilat? So let's say this is all coming for that purpose, to teach us about kilat elokim, meaning to teach us what Hashem feels, not to teach us that a mikalel is hung up. The Gemara says no. Imkay name akra klat. Could have just said klat, my kilulat, shmaminatarti. The lashon could either been mikalel or kalat. Now that you put them together, you get kilulat, and therefore you're able to darshan two things. One is to teach us that someone, a person who is chas v'shalom, mikalel Hashem, is put to death and then hung up. And number two, it teaches us how Hashem feels about the Ibud Rishayim, when the Rishayim are put to death. It tells us how Hashem feels about that. Now, it's very interesting over here. It's very important to note, very interesting to note over here, that the Gemara is quoting Rabbi Meir, who says this. There's a Gemara in Chagiga. The Gemara in Chagiga is actually discussing the case of Rabbi Meir and Acher. Acher, who went off the Derech, was the Rebbe of Rabbi Meir. And there in the Gemara in Chagiga, the Gemara discusses Rabbi Meir's learning from Acher. When it says Rabbi Meir, the Gemara questions, how could Rabbi Meir learn from Acher? So Gemara says, we have a pasuk that which we actually saw earlier in our Masechta, ki siftei kohen yishmeru dat, v'torah yivakshu mipiyo, ki malach Hashem tzvakotu. That only someone who's like a malach Hashem tzvakot, only someone who's like a malach, are you allowed to learn Torah from. But if a person's not like a malach Hashem, you're not allowed to learn Torah from them. And here, Rabbi Meir is learning from Acher. Acher left, unfortunately left Judaism, despite the fact that he was knowledgeable in Torah, he ended up leaving the Derech Hashem. And so he was a choteh. So how could Rabbi Meir be learning from a choteh like a cher? So that's the Gemara questions over here. The Gemara says, "Im dorei rav, the malach Hashem tzvakot yivachshutu mitorah mipiyo. If your Rebbe is like a malach Hashem, then you should learn from him. Im lav yivachshutu mitorah mipiyo. Otherwise, don't learn from him." So Reish Lakish says, "Rabbi Meir alkesh kachra b'darash hatras nechosh mei divrachamim libchat hashit ledati. The tamlo neemar ledati. That a person can learn. That if there is a way to learn Torah without accepting the principles or the actions or behaviors of the individual, one can do that. So Rabbi Meir learned from Acher in that manner." The Gemara says, okay, well, what's the problem? Now we have a kashu ad krayadadi, we have a machlokas apsukim. The Gemara answers, haba gadol, haba katan. Depends who the individual is learning. Rabbi Meir is a gadol, can learn from someone like Acher because he won't be influenced by Acher's actions or his hashkafa, and he can take the Torah, just the Torah away from him. But katanim, those that are not as well developed or as steeped in Torah like Rabbi Meir, they cannot learn from them because they will be influenced by the actions of Acher or Dashkafa of Acher, and therefore they should not learn from these types of individuals. So now Gemara says, okay, Kiata Rabdimi, when they came here, Amrei Amarava, Rabbi Meir, Achla Takla, Vashada Shikla, Labara, that they ate the good stuff and they threw away the bad stuff. So now the Gemara comes along and says a very, very interesting story. Ashkei Rabba Bashila Leyo. Rabba Bashila, this is again in Chagiga, Ted Vavam and Bet. Rabba Bashila found Leyo Amalei, Maika Avid HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is Hashem doing up above in the heavens? So Amalei, Kamar Shmaitata Mipumayo Dukulu Rabbanon. He's saying over all the Memrot of the Rabbanon, all the Tanaim, all the Morim, he says over what they say. Umipume de Rabbi Meir lo Kamar. But he doesn't say any Torah over from Rabbi Meir. Amalei, am I? Why doesn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu say any Torah over from Rabbi Meir? Because he learned his Torah from Acher, and therefore his Torah is dirtied, or some way not appropriate, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't say over his Torah. So, why is that? Why is Hashem treating Rabbi Meir that way? Rabbi Meir rimon matzah, he found a pomegranate. Tochu achal, he ate the seeds. Klipato zarak, and he threw away the bad, the outer shell, he threw it away. So Amalei, so then Eliyahu says to him, Hashta Kamar, you convinced the Kodesh Baruch Hu, you were right about what you said. Now it says, right now Hashem is saying, Ma b'neir b'nei omer. What does Rabbi Meir, my son, say? And he quotes Rabbi Meir, so he started quoting Rabbi Meir. And what does he quote from Rabbi Meir? It's amazing, he quotes our Gemara, the Mishnah over here. What is Rabbi Meir omer? Meir b'nei omer, b'zman shadam mitzta'er shechina malashon omer. When a person's in pain, what does the Kodesh Baruch Hu say? Meaning that when a person is lost, the person is being put to death. What does the Kodesh Baruch Hu say? Klani mi roshi, klani mi zori. Hey, my head's heavy, my arms are heavy. Im kacha Kodesh Baruch Hu mitzta'er al daman shel rishayim. If this is the way Hashem feels about those that are lost, the daman of the rishayim who didn't follow His laws, who violated His laws, kavachomer al daman shel tzadikim shenishbach. So the Kodesh Baruch Hu will feel this way about those that are holy and those that are tzadikim that are lost. So here they quote, very interesting enough, the Gemara quotes the Ar Mishnah as being the conversation that was held between Eliyahu and Rabbi Bashila, and then when Rabbi Bashila was menatzeach et Eliyahu, kilu menatzeach et Kodesh Baruch Hu, and Kodesh Baruch Hu then quotes Rabbi Meir, he quotes our Mishnah and Rabbi Meir. And it's very interesting because he's quoting the Mishnah about the Rishaim being lost, that Hashem is mitzta'er, and over here Acher is being lost, is the one who was lost, and Hashem is mitzta'er over the fact that Acher was lost, and then kavachomer over the loss of Ed Tzadik. So also over there, it's interesting in the Gemara, a little bit earlier on in the Gemara, there's a case with the Rabbi, and Rabbi is sitting down, and a young woman comes before Rabbi and says, please, Parnaseini, help me get Parnasa, I can't be Mefarnes. So Rabbi Meir asks her, whose daughter are you? She says, Bat Miat, Amar Lo, Bito Shel Acher Ani, I'm the daughter of Acher. He says, Adayin Yesh Mizaro Be'olam, I'm shocked that any of his children are still around. The pasuk says, "Lo nin v'lo neched be'amo ben sarid b'migurav," that there should be, the Rasha has no remnants left of him. There'll be nothing left of him when it comes to this. Amrulo, she said to him, "Zochor l'torato v'al tizkor l'masav." Remember his Torah and do not remember his actions. It's simply a thing that Rabbi Meir had done. He took his Torah, but not his actions. Miyad yarda eish v'sichcha safsalo shel Rabbi Meir, shel Rabbi. Immediately a fire came down from heaven and singed the bench that Rabbi was sitting on. Bochav amar Rabbi. Rabbi cries and says, "Umar lemitganim ba'kach." So those that were ruined by Torah, or those that were rishayim, Hashem protects them, comes down and singes the bench. Right, lemishtabchim ba. Those that are praised by Torah, I mean that they kept the Torah and they learned the Torah. Achazkam v'kam, Hashem will take care of them. So we have two memorals in the Gemara over the, in Chagiga about Rabbi Bar Acher, and Rabbi Meir is learning from Acher, and then Rabbi actually getting the same message from the daughter of Acher, saying that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is mitzta'er, or that Hashem still protects those that learned Torah, even though they went off the derech. They have chazkam v'kamo, certainly for those that are on the derech, and those that keep the Torah and mekadeshim shamayim. So this is a Gemara that's quoted here. Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah is the Gemara that was first quoted from a Kodesh Baruch Hu in Rabbi Meir's name, because here Rabbi Meir spoke about the Kodesh Baruch Hu's feelings and the way Kodesh Baruch Hu interacts with our world. So now we're continuing in the Gemara. How do you know that if a person leaves over a mate overnight, that they violate the lotase? Tamalomar ki kavor tik berenu, that you must bury him, the double lashon. Mikana malinet metosho verbalo tase. I mean that it could have just said ki kavor, you have to mean mikaberoto. But here it says ki kavor tik berenu, the double lashon, the extra lashon comes to teach you not only by someone who's put to death by bezin him in nitle, but rather any mace that's left overnight has to be tavor tik berenu. Mikana malinet metosho verbalo tase. Ika darmisam seyam rab yochanim shim rab shim yochai. Rem is the kvura minatora minayin. How do you know that the kvura, someone needs to be buried minatora? From here we have a hint that there is a remez min haTorah that a person must be buried. And that's what, in the end, Rabbeinu Chanana, when he concludes, is kaimalon mitzvah zu midirabbanon. This mitzvah of bearing the mace and taking care of the mace are all mitzvot dirabbanon, because it's really an asmachta from the Krah. Malko, the Shavar Malko again, the machlokas in the Rishonim about who Shvar Malka was. Some say that it refers to Shmuel. Others say that it refers to the Persian king of the time, which seems more likely, especially in this case. So I'm like, Shvar Malka, Rabbi Chama, Kvura min haTorah minayin. Where do you know Kvura from the Torah? Ishtik, v'lo amar lei v'lo midei. He had nothing to respond. Didn't have any response to him. So I'm Rav Acher bar Yaakov, Imser almo b'yodo d'tipshai. The world's been given over to the fools. D'ibayla the meimer, ki kavor. Why didn't he quote him our pasuk, ki kavor? That he must bury the mace. See, the Mara says, d'ilavile aron. That he thought that the meaning of ki kavor doesn't mean to bury him, but kavor means to encapsulate him. You could do that in our own. You don't have to bury him in the ground. So now, why don't you use, what about tik berenu? It had a double lashon, kavor, tik berenu. Fine, you put him in our own, but you still have to be tik berenu. You have to submerge him in the ground. Lomash malay. He says it would not. Shvor Malka didn't learn double lashonot or extra lashonot. Ki kavor, tik berenu would teach him that you bury him in the ground. He was not accepting of such a drasha, and therefore Rav Acher would not bring, didn't bring up such a drasha. But it says, okay, why doesn't he prove it to him with the fact, Nimri Tvor Tzadike, that a Tzadike were buried, meaning the forefathers, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were buried, let's say from there, that it's a mitzvah. It was just a Minhag Ba'alma. They kept Minhag Olam. Minhag Olam was to bury people, and therefore they were treated with that same kavod, and they were buried, like the kavod afforded to all people. But it says, okay, Mintakavri Kodesh Baruch Hu Moshe. Hashem buried Moshe. Should there be a proof that you have to bury the mace? It says, the lowly stane, Hashem did that so that Moshe would get the same treatment as that normal person, that he'd be buried. Not that that was a command that people must be buried, but rather he was doing what normal people got. They got a burial. Tashma. Alright, what about this case? Visavdulo kol Yisrael v'kavru oto. So now it says in the Pasuk in Malachim Aleph, is referring to the son of Yerubavam, that there's a nevuah from Achia Shiloni. Yerubavam's son falls ill, and Yerubavam sends his wife to Achia Shiloni in order to find out what's going to happen with this child, who is going to, looks like he's on his deathbed, and he wants to know what's going to happen to his son, Aviah, the son of Yerubavam. So the woman approaches Achia Shiloni, he's very old at the time, he can't see. Now, when she walks in, Hashem tells him that the wife of Yerubavam has come, I want you to tell her this message, This is the message. This son will die. This child, Achiyah, is going to die. But he'll be the only one who is going to be buried and have a eulogy said about him. But the rest of your family will be wiped out and they will not be eulogized and they'll be buried because you did not keep the word of Hashem. Hashem split the Malchus and gave it to you in order that you should be making the Shema Shamayim and be Mekadosh Hashem. Instead, you took Bnei Yisrael the other way. You took them away from Hashem. You took them to Avodah Zarah because that your family will be wiped out. So in that statement over there in Melachim, it says, the Pasuk says, that all of Bnei Yisrael will eulogize him and bury him. So you say that they're going to bury the child of Yerovam. So the way it says, lo dishtanu min nahaga. Hashem is just saying, no, that won't be different than any other normal child. I mean that Izachiyah will be buried like normal people get buried. Not that he's commanding them to bury him, but rather they will bury him like normal people get buried. But that will not be true for the rest of your family. Let's do it from the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu. The Pasuk in Yirmiyahu says, lo yisabdu b'lei kaveru lo domain al pnei adamayu, that they will not be eulogized and not be buried. They will be like the inanimate objects on the face of the earth. Here it's talking about the people killed out or destroyed. They're actually going to die from sickness. They're going to die from sickness. They're going to be left to rot. They're going to be people, so many people dying from sickness that they won't have time to deal with each other or deal with the mate team that are there. And therefore, they'll be just left to rot out on the streets. So Mara says, why? Oh, so from here you see that this was a punishment for these individuals that they would not be buried. The implication for that is that normally people are buried. Mara says, no, Delishtanu Mimin Haga. Hashem wanted it to be different than normal. Normal people get buried. He wanted to show them that why they were dying was because of what they had done and how bad the situation was. So therefore they ended up in a situation they were not buried to demonstrate the fact that what they had done was wrong. But not that he's commanding normal people to be buried and they not be buried, but rather, this is going to be different than what happens to normal people that they get buried. So Gemara does not have, in the end, necessarily a definitive proof that one must be buried in the ground. And that's what, again, the conclusion of the Rabbeinu Chanan over here, that this is a mitzvah d'rabbanan to be kover, to bury the mace. Ibailuhu. Now the Gemara asks a very basic question. Kivura, why do we bury the mace? Is it mishum bizyonahu? O mishum kaparahu. Now the bizyon over here, is it because of the embarrassment? Over here, the embarrassment means the embarrassment of the family, of the relatives. That maybe we were left out on the, and then they will rot and he will decompose out in the public domain. That'll be embarrassment for the family. So do we bury him because of that embarrassment to the family? O mishum kaparahu. Is it because of the kaparata mate? When you place the body in the ground. So Rashi says, when you are mitbazeh and you mashpil him under the ground, you put him all the way down, that's an embarrassment to him. You can also say the record of the rot and the decomposition in the grave will also be a kapara. So what's the purpose of burying him? Is it burying him is because of the bizyon, because we don't want the relatives to be embarrassed? Or the reason that we bury him here is in order to allow for the kapara to take place for this individual? So the mind of Kamina, what's the difference? The person commands, I don't want to be buried. If he commands that he doesn't want to be buried, do we listen to him or do we not listen to him? If you say that it's because of the relatives or the family that they will not be embarrassed, then lo avko kuminei. He can't give such an instruction. I mean, if the whole purpose of burying him is to protect the kavod of those that are alive, he doesn't have the right to waive their rights of kavod. They want him to bury, they can bury him. On the other hand, vi amar mishum kaparahu. If you say it's for a kapara for the mace, then hayamar lo binan kapara. He says, I don't want a kapara. The mace can make such a demand or a declaration that I'm not interested in this kapara, and then you wouldn't bury him. So vi nafkamina. Tosus points out of here, there is kapara. Even when the mace is not buried, he's left out to decompose and rot, there is still kapara. The question is, which is better? I mean, we want the better kapara for the mace. Do we emphasize kapara and the better kapara for him to be buried? Or the fine for him, the kapara being left out to decompose on the out on the field would be just as good in terms of kapara, but we're worried about the bizyonam of the family. So where do we give emphasis to over here? So it's my, what's the din? Tashma, midikvor tzadike. Since the tzadikim were buried, we see what it must be. Tzadikim don't require kapara. Nevertheless, they were buried. Viamart mishum kapara, tzadike the kapara tzriche. Since when did tzadikim need kapara? Gemara says, whoa, yes, of course they do. In dichtiv, damin tzadik baritz ashe yaseh tov lo yachta. I mean that there's a basic premise that we're human. If we're human, we make mistakes. If we're human beings, we make mistakes. We need kapara. So even tzaddikim need kaparas. So that's not a good proof. Tashma b'saftu lo kol Yisrael v'kavru oto. It says about, or v'kavdu oto, right, that this is the sole individual that will end up in the grave for Yeravam. So you see over here, he has a child that's going to be buried, right? Right? So if the whole purpose is for the Meitim to have kapara, why don't the rest of his relatives, I mean that all of his children, his descendants are all going to get wiped out, why don't they get a burial? I mean, if we want their Rishayim, we know the Rishayim, so they wouldn't need the kapara, so we should bury them so they get the kapara. I mean, if it's because of Bizyonan, if it's for the kavod of the people, then we understand why they got buried. But if the whole purpose is kapara, why shouldn't they get a burial over here? Yekadavlu kapara. Ay tzadik, the tzadiku davile kapara. Hanak lav lehu lahu kapara. Right? Hanak lo lahavi lehu kapara. No, the Gemara says, no, you're misunderstanding. It's not that we want to bury all Rishayim to give them a kapara. We want to bury people so they can get a kapara. That's only if they're deserving of a kapara. So this child who was a tzaddik or was not of the age where he could have been held culpable, therefore when he is buried, so he can get a kapara. Then the other relatives, children, descendants of Yerovam were not deserving a kapara. So Hashem says they will not be buried because we don't want them to get kapara. Again, so you have no proof from here. Either they're not, either we don't bury them, right, because we want there to be bizayon here, or we don't bury them over here because we don't want it to be kapara. Again, so there's no proof. Tashma.
Right, now quotes from the pasuk in Yirmiyahu that we saw above about the people being killed out, but lo yisabdu velo yikaveru, that they will not be eulogized and they will not be buried. So it sounds from there, if they're Rishaim and they're really bad and Hashem is killing them off, why not have them be buried in order that they should get some kapara? So it sounds from here that there is no issue of kapara, or that that's not what the main reason for burying the individual is. Now Gemara says, no, lo havi luhu kapara. Hashem doesn't want them to get kapara. I mean that Hashem's intent is that they shouldn't get kapara in this case because they were so bad. And truthfully, yes, burying might help with kapara, but over here he didn't want them to have kapara. So from here, at this point in the Gemara, as the Rush points out, it's Gemara is inconclusive about the question as to whether burying is for kapara or mishum bizayon.
Is the eulogy that is done, is that for the yikara dechaye? Is that for the benefit of the those that are alive? It's kavod for those that are alive to have eulogized this individual. Oh, yikara dechachve avu. Or is it a eulogy for the person who passed away? It's kavod for the mace. The mind nafkamina, what's the difference? Damar lo tisbidu lau gavra. Either the person who's on his deathbed says, do not eulogize me. Or inami lafuke miyorshim. Or it's coming to exclude the case of Yorshim, meaning that we want to take money, not exclude, but I'm sorry, take money out of the Yorshim. We want to force the Yorshim to pay for the eulogy. Because if, again here, if it's a for the mace, the covenant mace, the eulogy, then the mace can make a demand that they don't make a eulogy, they don't have a eulogy for him because that would be what he wants. On the other hand, if you say it's for the kavod of those that are still remaining alive, he can't waive their rights to that kavod and therefore they would do a eulogy anyway. Also, if it's for kavod mace, right, then we can force the Yorshim to pay for a eulogy or to pay to have a eulogy given for the individual because it's for Kavod HaMeis. They don't have a right to walk away from Kavod HaMeis. We're going to obligate them in Kavod HaMeis. On the other hand, if it's for the Kavod HaChayev, it's for the benefit of the Kavod of those that are alive, those that remain, then the Yorshim can make a choice. They don't want that Kavod. They're not going to pay for it. So again, that would be the Nafkamina in these cases. Tos Tashma, what is it? Vayavo Avram lispo de Sarah v'lif kota. Avram came to give a eulogy to Sarah and to cry for it. Yeah, my mishum yakara dechayev, if it's all for the Kavod of those that are still remaining alive. Oh, mishum yakod Avram, mashol lo Sarah. Because of Avram's Kavod, they kept Sarah. They didn't bury right away. They had to wait for Avram to come back from Akedat Yitzchak. So they waited for him and didn't bury Sarah in order they can eulogize her. So that sounds like the purpose of the eulogy is for the Kavod HaMeis, and therefore they were willing to hold her out, not bury right away, because there was something a greater Kavod HaMeis for through the eulogy. Sarah Gufanechala, Sarah liked it this, Ki Eche de Miyaker Bo Avraham. Sarah was happy with the eulogy, because the eulogy would get Kavod to Avraham, and Sarah wanted Avraham to have that Kavod. So therefore we held Sarah over in order to give that Kavod to Avraham, so we have no proof from here. Tashma. Vesavdudo called Yisrael, Vekavruoto. The case of Achia ben Yerovam, whose burial is going to be buried and eulogized. If you say it, the benefits of kavod of those that are living, Anach bnei yakara ninu, right? These people, I mean, the house of Yerovam are people who are worthy of any kavod. Somewhere it says, no, nechalu, the tzadikaya de miyakar behu inche. That the tzadikim like it that other people get kavod through them. So I mean that and the tzaddikim want to give schus to other people and to give kavod to other people. And therefore, even though they weren't deserving of the kavod, they wanted they wanted the people that were alive to get kavod through them so that they should feel good. Tashma, lo yisbeduv lo yikavru, lo nechal the tzaddiki, demiakrei birishaye. Wait a minute. It says by lo yisbeduv otov lo yikavru, those that we're not going to get a burial, and the rest not be eulogized and not be buried. So over there you see that what? They're not going to be eulogized. If it's Yikari Dechayiv, those that are still alive, why shouldn't they be eulogized? The people alive may not be Rishayim. There it must be that it's all for the Kavod Ameis, and that these people are Rishayim, so therefore they're not going to have a eulogy. Where it says, no, Lo Nechalet Tzadikaya Demiakri Bishaya. No, those that remain alive are not going to want to get Kavod from those that are buried over here for the eulogy, because they are Rishayim, and nobody wants to be mit kaved. Nobody wants to get kavod through the fact that a Rasha passed away. So therefore, even the tzaddikim will not want a eulogy here, even though it's for their kavod. So again, it's not definitive. We don't know whether a eulogy is for the benefit of those that are alive or benefit of those that passed away. Tashma. Bishalom tamut ubimis reifot avotecha melachim rishinim asher yulufenecha ken yisrafu lach v'hoi adon yisbedu lach. So this is Yirmiyahu speaking to Tzidkiyahu HaMelech, and he says, Nebuchadnezzar is laying siege to the city of Yerushalayim. He says, Nebuchadnezzar is going to succeed, he's going to conquer the city, and you're going to see him eye to eye. And again, they're going to poke your eyes out, and you're not going to see that, and you're going to be taken away from the city into Bavel. But just know that you will be buried in peace. I mean, that even though you're going to go through all these travails, and you're going to be taken into Galut, nevertheless, you're going to die in peace, and be buried in the burial plots of your fathers, and they will give you a eulogy. So that's what it says. B'shalom tamut. Kimis Reifot. I don't know, here they have a bet in the Tanakh, in the Navi, it's actually with the Chof. Kimis Reifot Abotecha Malachim Rishonim Asher Yulu Fanecha Ken Yisrafu Lach. They're going to also burn you. That's the Minhag we'll see later on in Sanhedrin. They used to burn up the possessions of the king, so they'll do the same for you. Right, and they will call out, woe is it to our master, right, and they will give a eulogy for you. So here, the Gemara says in different places, what was the fact that he died in peace? One is that Nebuchadnezzar died before Tzidkiyahu, and therefore Tzidkiyahu was released from prison and then died the next day. The other possibility is that Tzidkiyahu was, that even though his eyes were poked out, he nevertheless would not be killed by the Cherev, that he would still be alive afterwards, and he would be brought into Galut alive. So those are the two possibilities of how he died, b'shalom. If you say the whole point here is that the chayim, those that are alive, will get a benefit or from the eulogy, meaning that they'll get the kavod from the eulogy, who might have kaleimine? Why should Tzidkiyahu care that they eulogize him? No, that's exactly what Yirmiyahu was saying. Bnei Yisrael will get kavod from you. They will eulogize and get a kavod through you like they did through your forefathers. It's a message to him that he will be die and he'll be eulogized just like his forefathers. Not that the eulogy is something that's of interest to him, but rather it's an indication that he will die and have the same death and burial that his fathers had. Tashma. Nibzeb enav nimas. It's talking about that mi yishkan ba'olecha Hashem. It's the Tehillim. It says, who can live in your place, Hashem? So it says, Nivze be'einayim nimas, those that are not worthy, that are bazui, l'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu nimas, that you should make ma'us, they should be disgusting to you. Ze Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda, this is Chizkiyahu, why? Shegirer atzmot aviv. He took the bones of his father, because his father was a rasha, and therefore he was not chushesh for the kavod of his father. And after his father passed away, he was a melech, right, of Yehuda. He took his bones.
Menashe.
He was a melech Yehuda. He took his bones and he dragged them through the street. Aviv al mitah shel chavalim, on a bed of strings. If the whole point of a eulogy or what you do with the mace afterwards is for the kavod of those that are alive, my time, why would he do this? Right? Meaning that why would he do this? This is all about his kavod. So what, he's going to be put down his kavod? So it says, Geichet avalei kapara l'avua. In order that his father will have kapara through this point, because his father was a rasha, in order for his father to gain kapara, he did this in benefit of his father. The Agosa Bach points out over here, and why is this help? Why does kapara help over here? We had a decision, the Gemara wanted to make a decision before, that for a mace, it's either because of the kavod of the chayim, or kapara for the mace, meaning that you can't have both of them together. And Rashi made that point before. If a person says, I don't want to be buried, and I don't want the kapara, even if you bury him after that, it won't be a kapara. So over here, how could it be? If the whole point of the hespate, or how you deal with the mace afterwards, is for kavod ha-chayim, if that's the case, then over here, why would it be a kapara if he drags him around? If the whole point of the eulogy afterwards is for your kavod ha-chayim. Kozabach leaves that as a tzarech yun or a tzad kasho. What you have to say is like what Tosu said on the previous Amud, that even though that the issue is bizyona or kavod of the chayim, nevertheless, there is an aspect of kapara still for the mace. Over here too, that when he dragged him out on chavalim, that would be a kapara for his father. Because of the kapara of this individual, we leave over, right, the kavod of Klal Yisrael. And the kavod of Klal Yisrael over here is being abrogated. Here's the king being dragged around on bones, and we're gonna give him some sort of kapara through that. And because of that, we are mevazeh, in a sense, Klal Yisrael, mevazeh, those that remain, because They don't, the whole point of the eulogy or all you do to the mace afterwards is kovod achayim. If that's the case here, you're gonna be mevazeh b'nei Israel, and you're gonna be mevazeh chizkiyo in order to benefit
Menashe.
That his bones are dragged around to get him a kapara. So when I said Israel in the gufayu nechelhu, that Israel wanted this way, the miyachle yakarayu legabe. They want it to be this way, and therefore they're mochel on their kavod in this instance. Why do they want to be this way? So people learn the lesson. Shivas itasru achirim. People will understand what it means to be number one, be someone who's bad. What's going to happen to you if you are a rasha? And number two is that people will take a, that people will get a kapara. That even though it's, they were rishayim, that there is a possibility of getting kapara that gives them hope to do tshuva and to return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So both of these things are beneficial to Klai Yisrael, to show what happens to the rishayim. And number two, to show that there is such an element of kapara, there's an ability in the end to have tshuva and kapara. So both of these were benefit to Bnei Yisrael. So because of that, that benefit to Klai Yisrael, they waived their kavod in this instance, they allowed him to drag the bones around, even though based on the, basic situation, he shouldn't have had to, or they should have to take into consideration the kavod of Chizkiyahu and the kavod of Klai Yisrael. But here they waived it in order to get the benefit of the other items. Okay.
It's just interesting to note over here that there is a machlokus in the Gemara in Brachos, in the Perak Mishemeto, Mutalov Vanav, about the tour for a person who is an Onain. An Onain is Patur Mina Mitzvot. Over there, there's actually a machlokus between Rashi and Tosafot about what does that mean that he's Patur Mina Mitzvot. Rashi says it means Patur Mitzvot, he doesn't have to do them. But if he wants to do them, he can do them. Tosafot, on the other hand, says when it says Patur, it means he's Patur Lagamra, he doesn't have that option. And it seems to be there that the difference between Rashi and Tosafot's position, that Rashi believes the reason that an Onain is Patur Mina Mitzvot is because he's emotionally incapable of doing the mitzvot. He's Torah al Mace, he has to focus on the Mace, and all the preparations and the emotional toll that the taking care of the mace have on him make him incapable or unable to do the mitzvot. So the Torah waives his need to do the mitzvot. But if he feels up to it, if he's able to do it, then according to Rashi, he can go ahead and do it. Other than Tosfos seems to indicate that the reason that your Potter Mitzvahs are only his Potter Mitzvahs is so that you can be, that's covered a mace, so that you'll be free to take care of the mace. And then on top of that, you won't be mesiach that from the mace. If you go do a mitzvah, you might forget or you might leave being focused on the mace. So according to Tosfos, it seems to be that the issue about why onin is potter min a mitzvah is because we are focused on the kvoda mace, whereas Rashi seems to say that the onin is potter min a mitzvah is because we're focused on the individual himself, the avel that's left behind. Which seems to be that machlokas is very similar to the question that we're asking over here. Not identical, but very similar to the question which we're going to conclude in tomorrow's Gemara about whether these issues are the kvoda mace or the kvoda chayim. Sometimes it seems that there's a mixture of both, but that question, Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos and Gemara and Brachot, whether only Potter Mitzvot is because of the Chai, the one who is remaining, the Avel, or is it because of the Kavod HaMeis for the one who has already passed away?
Okay, we'll stop over here.